discussion opportunity. And I will actually, a part of these ideas that I'm going to talk about was discussed last year in Williamsburg, but I should not assume that everyone who was in Williamsburg remembers it. And secondly, those who did not attend that workshop somehow learned about it. So I am starting from the very beginning.
There is an interesting parallelism between the wiki problems and then I will have to talk very I'm sorry. My ears are of wrong size, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Let me do without it.
There is an interesting parallel between wiki problems and problems of classical and quantum mechanics. I will try to explain this parallel and to suggest how this parallel can be used to get a different understanding of these problems. Okay. Those who know classical mechanics, quantum mechanics, what I'm saying will be quite obvious and so far, and I apologize in advance. So I am not assuming any knowledge of physics. But what is the main approach in physics in solving any problem, in solving almost any problem in physics? There is a function called the Lagrange function, and it is, I will think about classical mechanics, so then I will switch to field theory. It might depend upon T, though usually it does not. It depends upon the position vector Q, and it depends upon the velocity vector Q dot. Usually this function is the difference between kinetic energy and potential energy, but if you do some kind of symmetry reduction, this may break down. So actually all information about the physical system is hidden in this function. But this function is only a tool to proceed. I have to integrate this function, and this is called the action associated with the trajectory Q. Q is called trajectory. this is the action function associated with this projection. And actually, the Lagrange principle says that we should look for the trajectory Q of T, which minimizes the action function. So the action function is a function on the infinite dimensional space of trajectory, and we are looking for the minimum of this action function. Then, if we are able to solve this minimization problem, and actually where we solve it, how do we solve it? It is minimization of an integral, so we can write the Lagrange-Euler equation, and this Lagrange-Euler equation is nothing else but the Newton laws. So after we solve this, if we are lucky, solve this equation, we find the trajectory, and then we can answer really physically important questions. For example, what is the value of where is the point at the moment T naught in the moment? What is its velocity? Whatever. There is a lot of questions that we can answer right now. Let me on this blackboard remind you what do we do in wiki problems. We choose our favorite norm on the function space. And this is the norm on the function space. And, well, it can be a maximum norm, it can be an integral norm, whatever. For example, it can be something like this. Which gives us, say, the Sobolev norm. There are two Sobolev norms. It is the square of the norm. The square of the norm. As you see, this expression is very much like this expression. Isn't it? The difference is that we have high derivatives, and here we have only first derivatives. Why do we have to stick ourselves with first derivatives in physical problems? Because of casuality principle. Everything has to be determined by the position and the velocity at the initial moment. And that's why we have to restrict ourselves with first derivatives. But we are free people in a free country, and why cannot we imagine something else? A great new world when everything is determined by the position, by the velocity, and by the latest instructions of the party committee. We can do like this. So we can easily consider something like high derivatives mechanics. So what do we do next? We also have, and that is important, a condition. F on E is given. And we have to incorporate this condition somehow. F on E is given. And we are looking to minimize F squared under this condition. E is some subset, as usual, E is some subset, specified subset, and there is some function on this subset. So we want to minimize this function, this expression, subject to this condition.
And it should be
yes, okay, if you wish. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Okay, so as you see, this plays the role of the action functional. This plays the role of the action functional. And we actually are solving exactly this problem. And if we are lucky to solve it, then we should try to compute the value of f at some other new point and so on. The thing is, when we are not doing minimization, then sometimes, as it was explained yesterday, we get a function which is close to minimum. But close to minimum means that actually you can, this function has a value at any point. But there are other functions which have different values at different points. So we are calculating the values of a function which is okay. It is close to the minimizer, but it is not minimizer. And therefore, the values of, especially if the norm is an integral norm, the values of the function are not very well understood. It is a value of some function which cannot exactly define this function. But if we are able to minimize, then everything is okay. We have a good problem, and we can solve. Okay, definitely for this kind of problem, we can also write on, just a moment, how to incorporate this? How to incorporate this constraint? It is known for many, many years that we can use Lagrange multipliers to minimize, to incorporate the constraints. And so, for example, in this case, we can consider minus, if you wish, f minus f naught d mu on E. D mu plays the role of the Lagrange multipliers, and we can take the minimum of this with respect to f and mu. If we do minimization with respect to f and mu, it is easy to see, and this is just Lagrange principle, that we get minimization of this subject to this condition. But this is classical mechanics. We are looking for the minimum of the actual function. However, in statistical mechanics and in quantum mechanics, there is a different idea which proves to be very, very fruitful. Which says, okay, let us not look for the minimum of the functional, of the actual functional. Let us agree that all trajectories can occur. Let us assign a probability to occurrence of each trajectory. And let us compute what we want to compute, for example, the value of the value at a given point, the value of the trajectory at a given point, by integrating over all trajectories with given weights. What are the natural weights? The natural weights are the following. I am returning to classical mechanics. E to the power minus beta a of u. This is the weight. This is the weight assigned to the trajectory q. Which means that trajectories which are close to the minimal trajectories will give us the biggest. Will have the biggest weight. Whereas trajectories which are very far from the minimal trajectory will get negligible weights, and we can simply discard them. What is beta? Beta in statistical mechanics is the inverse temperature, which is a large parameter. And we know very well, okay, just a moment. For example, we want to know the value of trajectory at the moment of time t naught. How do we do this? We integrate over all trajectories, and certainly we have to divide by the sum of weights in order for the weight to be integral of the weight, integral of this to be 1. And this is the expected value of u of t naught. There might be not a single trajectory which gives you this value of t naught, but this is the expected value. How is it related? How does this approach relate to the classical approach? If I take beta goes to infinity, then these integrals can be estimated according to the spatial phase method, or in this case, Laplace method, which says that all probability fits down on the minimal trajectory. Only minimal trajectory has any meaning, all other trajectories do not have any meaning. So here I will get the minimal trajectory, these guys will cancel out, and we get exactly the value of the minimal trajectory at the given moment of time. Okay. Actually, I would like to turn to quantum mechanics. Though they are formally equivalent to each other, which means that I would like to put the I here, square root of minus 1 here, and consider the following expression. I over H A of U, say Q of U naught, the amplitude of this event. Actually, as you see, H is the Planck constant, and it is not a large constant, but a small constant, but, well, yes. And the appearance of I, it is a very subtle story, but for us, it is we can treat it purely formally, right? So, the suggestion is the following. Let us treat this as the action functional of F mu, No.
Let me treat this
as the action function of f and mu. And instead of looking for the minimum of this action function, let me look at the amplitude or amplitude related to the action functional. Amplitude related to this action functional. As a matter of fact, what we need to compute is the generating function. It is also called the partition function in quantum field theory. And that's what we are looking at. This is what will go into the denominator eventually. And by the way, if we want to compute something like this, it will be some derivative of this generating function, just derivative, nothing else. So if we can compute the generating function, we can compute everything. There is, however, a huge problem with this formula, because here we have to integrate over infinite dimensional spaces. And the best mathematical results about this is that such integration is not possible. However, it is well known that it gives excellent results in quantum field theory, in quantum mechanics, which are fully supported by experiments. But moreover, there is a way to get this infinite dimensional integration in absolutely rigorous way. It will take me another, say, couple of lectures to explain how, but it can be done. So instead of minimizing this functional, let us concentrate on trying to compute this fully defined integral. What I will try to explain today is that This integral also appears in an absolutely different area, where some other problem leads to the same integral, and that problem is already well defined and can be pretty well solved. And therefore, so these two problems are equivalent, though by in appearance they are absolutely different. Give me a moment. Okay. Just before I switch there, let me look here and let me get rid of integration with respect to mu. I want to remind you that this is my functional. Okay. And let me try to get rid of integration with respect to mu. What I will have to integrate, I will have to integrate this expression. It is a Fourier transform of d mu, and the Fourier e to the power something d mu. And it is well known that this Fourier transform is delta function of this. So actually, what I will have to perform an integral. But I will have to integrate only over functions f such that f on e is f naught. I will have to integrate only here. I want to rewrite it a bit different way, and it will take me. All functions, but I must take this into account, and this will be the following. And here I will have the product delta function of f, I will write it delta f minus I naught of x, x in e. Don't be mad at me. So for this product to be meaningful, okay, assume if you wish that e is a finite set, but maybe it's a huge finite set. So this makes perfect sense. Okay. Now it is better for me to start from a different viewpoint, that's a different viewpoint, but hopefully, not hopefully, but I will arrive at the same integral over here. So I will have two absolutely different problems. We lead to the same functional integral. So I can choose which problem to solve. Start with the linear space R D, finite dimensional linear space. And I will prepare the following object here. It is R D times R D U times, I will explain all notations. And just a moment. And times simply R D. Okay, R D Q is the set of linear functions on RD, not yet. What is this? The space of symmetrics by linear forms on RD. And this is the space of symmetric F linear forms. And F stands for smoothness. Okay. Now I want to let me call this H of D. Of D and F. H stands for Heisenberg. The most important feature of this object is that it is a natural group, and not it is a very nice Lie group. It is a unipotent Lie group. And if I say that this is a group, I must present the way to multiply its elements. Okay, let me say how I multiply this element. Let me call this element X. This element y, this element y, 2, y, s, and this element delta. I must multiply it by x prime, y 2 prime, y s prime, delta prime. And the multiplication story happens on the last point. Lambda plus lambda prime plus 1 half. Very long guy here. Y prime of x minus y of x prime plus y 2 prime. I'm sorry. I messed up here. I'm sorry. Y 2 plus y 2 prime. I was thinking about something else. Plus 1 half or something. Start it with the very end. If you allow me, I will change notation. I will start with S and end with 2. And I will do Y lambda. I'm very sorry for the changes. S prime. I'm very sorry for the Y. So, otherwise it will be a very long writing. The next guy, how do I add them? S plus Y, S prime. It will be an estimate for something. Now the change starts already here. S minus 1 plus Y, S minus 1 prime. And here already change 1 half. Y S of X minus Y S prime or X prime. That means wait. This is an asymmetric form. It has S places to place vectors. I place this vector X prime on one of the places, doesn't matter on which. And I get an S minus 1 form. Symmetric S minus 1 form, right? And the same here. Now what do I have here? Y plus Y prime. And something will come from all of these guys. Plus 1 half of Y S. How many places do I have to put vectors? S places. But I need to get a form. So I will put X on all places except on one. It will be a linear form. X prime. Minus Y S prime. And I put S on all places except of one. This place. And obviously, for the last one, for this, lambda plus lambda 1 plus 1 half, and I think you guess what I have to put. I have to put, there are S places, and on each of these places I will put X prime, and I will get a number. And there are S places here, on each of them I put X, and I will get a number. And the same with all the rest.
So in particular, except for y s and x and y prime s and x prime, nothing else plays any interesting role as opposed to being added.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
If you look at it very attentively, you will see that actually it mimics the rule of commuting of high derivatives. It simply means the rule of commuting of high derivatives. Okay. So one can quite easily see that this is indeed a group, that this the neutral element of this group is 0, 0, 0, easy to see. And the
that inversion in this group is just putting minus in front of everyone. This is a group, and this is a Lie group. And because all this, actually, I cheat for you a little bit, not all coefficients are one hat. The coefficients come from the Baker-Hausdorff Wingen formula, but I did not want to write all these coefficients. And there is a small cheat here. But nevertheless, there is a formula. It is a quite long form. Okay, nevertheless, what we have is a group, a finite dimensional Lie group. Very nice Lie group. It is a uniform Lie group. And as with any Lie group, we can associate a quantization to this group, which is exactly what I have to say in the remaining 12 minutes. I'm very sorry, but now let me talk about quantization. If I have, if I have a function on this group, a function on this group, it is a function of x, y prime or y and random. Okay. If I actually have two functions, phi one and phi two, then I can convolute them with respect to this. So each function, the convolution will turn the space of, say, C naught functions on this group. C naught means continuous functions with compact support. Where it turns this space into a non-commutative algebra. And therefore, each set function determines the convolution operator on this algebra. We call this the quantization associated with this function. We call it quantization associated with this function. So, what function are we going to quantize here? This is a good question, and I can answer this question. For example, let us look at the function in the exponent. It is, forget about x, it is a function on, forget about x, simply treat f alpha, okay. F alpha are coordinates of f-symmetric form, symmetric f-symmetric form. And let us treat f alphas as simply y s. What I have over there under the integral is just a function of only y s. Correct? The sum of squares of coordinates of y s. That's it. Y s is a f linear form. If I choose a basis in my space, Rb, I can find the coordinates of this s form, which I call f alpha. Okay? And this is exactly the function. Okay. So this is a function on a finite dimensional space. Again, in this regard, x's. X's will come out, will come only later. This expression, so the function is this. The function is this. And this is definitely a function on this space. A good thing about this function is that it is a polynomial. Actually, I have missed something and I need to depend one step back. What I have told so far was the so-called Lagrange formalism. But there is another formalism, Hamiltonian formalism, which is equivalent to the Lagrange formalism, but is better suited for our needs. Let me explain what I have. So, I have the Lagrange function. It is a function of x, u. I don't write p of x because I will then put a function here.
And Q dot, it is only the placeholder for Q dot of X. This is a function of finite dimensional space. Let us switch to a new function, the Hamiltonian function, which is a function of F, Q, and D. And how do I do the switch? I go from here to here, doing the Legendre transform, which replaces functions of Q dot to functions of P. And I can write the exact formula. Okay. What will it give me? Instead of having the action functional to be like it was, it is going to become like this. Actually, the appearance of this term is exactly the result of the inverse Legendre transform. It appears here. But you can easily understand, if I do the exponentiation of this and I integrate with respect to P, it will return me to the function. It is quite obvious. Why this form is better than this form? You see, Q dot of X is fully determined by Q of X. It is a derivative. P of X, which I call the momentum, momenta, are treated as absolutely independent. So we forget about the usual conditions that derivatives of one function must satisfy. We are only talking about P of X. Who will return us to Q dot of X? This term will return us to Q dot of X. So if I do the integral, the functional integral in the Hamiltonian way, the integral is going to be switching back to the problem I am interested in. I over H. Instead of, it is easy to see that I will have P alpha squared here. Here I will have P alpha squared, just a moment. For some reason I will have 2h here, but it's not important. And here I will have 1 f alpha of x d alpha of x dx. Yes, exactly. And I will have to integrate over d f and d d alpha, for all alpha. I will have to integrate over everything. The origin of this expression is very interesting, and I believe it was not well understood. The formal origin, it comes from this formula. But there is a non-formal origin, and I will try to explain it in the remaining 3 minutes. The thing is, if I had convolution quite fine, then I can take the convolution function of phi. Well, it is a series, I can convolute the function with itself, put factorial that they should be, and sum up. And I can take its value at the zero, as the zero, which is the unit of the function. And I will get a number. Let's see if this number depends upon phi. So I have a function on the even dimensional space of functions. I want to represent it as a Fourier transform. So I want to represent it as phi nu, something unknown of nu, d nu. Nu will be the dual space. You one can make an absolutely rigorous understanding of this formula. Now the interesting part. This is it.
It is the Fourier transform of this expression. After some other Fourier transform.
So that is not the phi nu.
Okay. When I have phi, it is a function from this group.
Yeah.
Correct? Actually, what I have cheated you a little bit means the following. First, I should take this function phi and do the usual Fourier transform and get to the usual Fourier transform with respect only to higher derivatives and get it on a dual space. And the function of the dual space is going to be exactly the Hamiltonian. Okay? And so, instead of, and here I need to have phi, the usual Fourier transform. Okay. It is quite a non-trivial fact that this function is not exactly this function, but they are very closely related. So when h goes to zero, I have h here, Planck constant. This function is asymptotically this function. So when I am doing this computation, I am ending up with a functional integral, don't I? And the interesting story is that I'm getting exactly the same functional integral I came up to with a pattern from the Wiki problem. The same integral. But this problem does not seem to be awfully difficult. Why? Because the Hamiltonian, as you see here, the Hamiltonian is a polynomial. So when I do the Fourier transform, I will get several derivatives at zero. And I will have to convolute a generalized function sitting at zero with itself many, many times. It is doable. As we all understand, it is quite doable. So computation of this function is quite doable.
It's quite doable?
Doable. You can do it. Yes, you can do this. You see? So, instead of trying to work with the Wiki problem itself, you can switch to this, algebraic analytic problem on this group with explicit formulas. All the formulas for the exponent and so on are exactly, it is only multiplication, the enveloping algebra, nothing else. If I am converting only the generalized functions sitting at the identity. So, I have written the formulas, but they are not the best. They have to be very significantly improved. And writing them will take another couple of hours, I believe. So I have to stop here because my time. Thank you very much.